The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play! Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
We are going beyond the box score today. Welcome, everybody. Recording this on a Wednesday afternoon. You might be watching it on YouTube, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. If you're listening in our podcast feed, happy Friday to you. Adam Azer here with, of course, ripped Jacob Gibbs, showing the traps again. And Jacob, I feel like if you could play a fantasy league with only wide receivers, you would. I feel like wide receivers are definitely your favorite position. Is that true or false?
No, it's definitely true. A long time ago, when I was like first getting into this, I made a dynasty league where it was all flex players just so I could only use wide receivers.
Really? That's weird.
I was ahead of my time there.
Well, we do have a couple of guests joining us today. We have Pat and Matt. We got Pat Fitzmaurice, managing editor for Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. Pat, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing well, Adam. Thank you for having me. Always great to talk to you and Jacob, and maybe the other guy too.
That would be Matt Friedman. Pat, you can follow him at Fitz_FF. And Matt, you can follow at Matt F. Am I saying it right? The Oracle. There we go.
I typed
it in wrong. And I was like, wait, is it like a funny play on words or did I just make a typo? No, it's a typo at Matt F. The Oracle. How you doing, Matt? Welcome to Beyond the Box Score.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I would say, Jacob, I would imagine based on the physical appearance that he would actually want to be in an IDP only where you just draft linebackers. Just a whole bunch of muscular linebackers with really thick necks and a whole bunch of tackles.
This is out of control. I wore a tank top last time to the podcast and it threw Adam and Dan for a loop like so hard that they just couldn't stop talking about it. So I think I'm just going to go every podcast rest of the way. It's summer, baby.
I never saw this coming. I never saw
even on Twitter, like Chris Towers talking about it, like it's all over the place.
Matt, would you like to, enlighten everyone on the professional announcement you just dropped on Twitter just before coming on the show?
Yeah, for the next 3 hours or so, I am the director of content at Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros, but I am leaving the company. In related news, the company is hiring. They are looking to hire an analyst. I've loved my time at Fantasy Pros. It's been a great place to work. I prefer to be an analyst as opposed to a director of content. And so I've had the opportunity to go to another place and, be more of an analyst role. So I'm, taking that opportunity, but I am leaving Fantasy Pros with, I wouldn't say a fully heavy heart, but definitely with some sadness. I talk about it in my Twitter post. It's been an absolutely fantastic place to work and, great people in the industry, great culture. So, I'm very friendly with Fantasy Pros, even though I will be leaving.
Now, Pat, what are they going to be missing? Tell us about like a favorite story or something like that.
Notice how he said not a fully heavy heart. That's because he doesn't have to work with me anymore. But no, I mean, I'm going to miss working with Friedman tremendously. You know, we're certainly going to remain friends, and I'm really only going to be upset if he stops sending me photos of beer menus at Belgian microbreweries, as he's fond of doing, so I can, you know, be jealous of him. As apparently, like in New England and New Hampshire, wherever he's living these days, they've got like this stash of incredible microbreweries. And, you know, here I am in Wisconsin, Chicago, up in the upper Midwest, where all the drinkers live. And we don't have access to these kinds of microbreweries. So very jealous.
You guys do have New Glarus, I will say. You have that within driving distance. So if it's good enough for the Watt family, I imagine it should be good enough for anyone else in the United States.
You get to, Matt, the good news is you get to be an analyst today, starting right now. So, Jacob, we're going to be talking about our favorite wide receiver stats, what they mean for you guys, how you use them to evaluate players going into a season and in season for that matter. And, Jacob, where are we starting when we look at favorite wide receiver stats?
I just want to say I'm so psyched to have analyst Friedman back. I didn't know what the new move was going to be into, but like that's very exciting for me as somebody who loves all the stats and analysis he puts out on Twitter. Super psyched to have both these guests on to talk about wide receiver stats, specifically like some of the more advanced stuff. And I kind of want to use these guys because they're two of the smartest guys that I follow on Twitter and interact with. As we analyze this as a litmus test on some of these stats. And so Pat mentioned these, like, I don't go quite as deep into the advanced stats as you, which is like, yeah, you probably shouldn't. but I'm like excited to have different perspectives on it. I think Pat like is excellent at what he does. Like he's been somebody that I consistently cannot catch in the rankings contest. Pat, you won within the last couple of years, right?
2020.
Yeah.
Won the in-season contest. I guess I ran pure that year. But yeah, normally happy to be in the top 25 most years. Just want to stay in the national rankings.
I don't think I've seen
Jacob was receiving votes. Jacob was others receiving votes.
Yeah. I'm always trying to catch him. So like I want to know Pat's like his magic formula here because I haven't seen anyone as consistent as him in the rankings contest. We're going to talk about per route data. That's something that we mention a lot. We're going to talk about red zone data, end zone targets, all that good stuff. I wanted to start with Matt. He brought up a good point that when I sent him over the stats we're going to talk about, he's like, we didn't mention route rate. And route rate is something that is so important to bring up, especially if we're talking about tight ends, but out wide receiver as well. Some of these guys that are only stuck playing in the slot don't get as many routes, as many opportunities as other guys. And so their per route data looks really good. And this is something that we talk about a lot, all this per route data and get all excited about it. But they have to get on the field first. Matt, you had a couple guys you wanted to bring up. I think JSN and Kadarius Toney. Was there anybody else you wanted to talk about on the just like playing time side of things before we get into the per route stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he is basically the flip side to the Kadarius Toney coin, but also Sky Moore. You know,
yeah.
But basically guys who are slot wide receivers and their offense is multiple enough to the degree where you do see a number of heavy sets. And you can also see this with the 49ers quite a bit. Not that they have a number three wide receiver really worth talking about, but they play a lot with a fullback. They play a lot with two tight ends. Yeah. And so, you know, in the old days of like, you know, 8 to 10 years ago, you know, people were just kind of starting to think about stuff of like target share, you know, like market share of targets and thinking in kind of a more advanced analytics way when it comes to targets and opportunities. And I would say that route rate is kind of an extension of that where you're thinking about volume, you're thinking about opportunities, you know, like it used to be like, oh, how many snaps does this guy play? But you know the snap data, it's important. It doesn't matter as much as the route data. Like how many routes is this guy running? Or if you're thinking about the number of dropbacks a quarterback has during the game, how many of those total team dropbacks is this guy on the field and running a route? And it's much more important for tight ends, but it's still pretty important for wide receivers, especially those guys who play in the slot.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know what? I think the best thing to do, guys, is if there's a specific player that we really want, let's not bury the lead, I guess. Like, just tell us. So is there a specific player? I mean, you mentioned Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, and did you say JSN, Jacob?
Yeah. I mean, we've heard rumblings that they're going to maybe use more three receiver sets, but we don't know. We don't know until the season starts. And I think the reason we bring up Radet to start this off with is just such an important, from a projection standpoint, when you're laying the groundwork, like how many, we can get excited about these players, but how many plays will they actually be out there? It was an issue for Jerry Jeudy early in his career. There's lots of examples. I wonder if like Elijah Moore, if they're going to actually go to more three receiver sets or not in Cleveland, like how much he's going to be on the field. So just guys that get kind of stuck in slot type roles. Sky Moore is definitely somebody that I'm concerned about. He rarely was used on the outside during his rookie season. It was all like slant stuff, right around the line of scrimmage stuff, just like design touches because his route tree wasn't very refined.
Well, and I would say on the flip side of that would be someone like Gabriel Davis. Not that I want to be like the Gabriel Davis stan this year because, you know, in retrospect, we were way too high on him this year. But he's going to be a guy who's out there like running 100% of the routes every game, you know, because he's just on the perimeter island. They don't play him in the slot, but he's got his role out wide and he's going to be in a high scoring, very functional offense. So like he's a guy that you look at route rate and you can say like, oh, this is someone who's going to have significant opportunities this year, whether he capitalizes on it or not. That's a different thing, but he's going to have the opportunities.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, I guess, Matt, I'll start with you about Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. What is it that you want us to know from a route standpoint about those guys? Matt?
Is he breaking up for you guys?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just think it's important to start with the route data stuff because like you brought up with Gabe Davis, like they're running so many routes. The Tampa Bay guys are ones that always stand out as not having good per route data, but they run so many routes that they have in the past. And so as we dive into this discussion and focus on the per route data, it's just important to have this baseline. So I think let's just go ahead and start with the per route data and start with yards per route run. I think in terms of publicly available efficiency metrics, yards per route run is at the top. Would you guys agree with that? It's pretty easy to find.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there's granularity with it in terms of kind of how you look at it, time frames, position groups, stuff like that. But just as kind of like a one-stop metric, yeah, that's probably the best one out there.
Yeah, and that's what we're here to do today is contextualize it. So the first thing I wanted to bring up, I've just seen really excellent research on this from Hayden Winks. It's been something that's been covered a little bit here and there, but I think it's really important to bring this to people's attention when talking about yards per route run. As we dig into it more, as it becomes more normalized, formation heavily affects yards per route run. So this is going to be the yards per route run average by the number of wide receivers on the field. Just to illustrate this, with one wide receiver on the field, the average is 2.01. With two or fewer wide receivers on the field, it's 1.9. And then with three or more, that 1.9 drops all the way to 1.41. That's where we see the significant drop off is from two to three. And so there's offenses that are using a ton of two receiver formations and not going to three receiver formations as often. And the wide receiver yards per route run data really gets out of control with some of these guys. You've probably seen on Twitter, if you're plugged into fantasy football at all, you've probably seen people talk about Rashid Shaheed and his ridiculous per route rates, but he's playing in an offense, and this applies to Chris Olave as well, where the per route efficiency really gets out of control. I think the best example recently to illustrate this is Corey Davis 2 years ago. Do you remember his insane rates?
Yeah.
His last year on the Titans, he was fourth in yards per route run. And so that was the first time I really started hearing people like really push back on yard per route run data and be like, Corey Davis is clearly not a top five wide receiver in the league, not even close. And so I just wanted to bring up that point that like there's a huge drop off from two to three. I was curious if you guys have heard that before. And then we've got a few specific player examples to talk about with it.
I mean, I was aware of it, but I didn't know quite exactly what the difference was. So, I mean, it's interesting to see things like the drop in Jalen Waddle's yards per out run from two to three receivers. But at the same time, his number is really good with three receivers.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't concern me that, oh, this guy only pops when he has two receiver sets. I mean, like Jahan Dotson's splits are a little more concerning. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, Dotson only played, 12 games last year. So I'm hoping that can maybe be attributed to a relatively small sample size.
Yeah, Miami is the place to start with yard per route run data. We got absolutely insane stuff from Tyreek Hill last year, and Jalen Waddle was third in the NFL. Only Justin Jefferson and Tyreek had a higher yard per route run rate than him last year. And so when you start to like place him on list of other young receivers to have done the things that he has done, he looks like one of the best dynasty assets out there. But the offense that he played in really boosted things at an insane degree. So Tyreek Hill averaged 3.8 yards per route run with two or fewer receivers on the field. That dropped to 2.9 with three or more. Jalen Waddle was at three, dropped to 2.4. And then you brought up the Washington guys. John Dotson, 0.98 yards per out run with three or more wide receivers on the field. It's just, I think you are right to like, it's not going to be that low with a better offense and a larger sample size. But we definitely did see some of these guys. Chris Olave particularly is somebody, he gets put on these lists historically. But like his numbers did drop a lot from two to three wide receiver sets. But on the flip side of that, we'll see more three receiver sets probably in New Orleans this year. Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to bring this up and kind of introduce this topic and see what you guys thought about it, because I don't hear this brought up a whole lot with yard per route run data. It's important to contextualize it.
Yeah, I think it is important to contextualize it, but I think the contextualization isn't as important year to year as some people would maybe expect. So let's think back to Corey Davis and the example you mentioned of him being awesome in his final season with the Titans. And a lot of that, you know, they were in two tight end sets. He's the dominant wide receiver on the field. And then him going to a different system where they use more three wide receivers, a totally new situation for him. In that situation, I think the context is really important. But in a situation where we might have a lot of continuity year to year, then I think it's not quite as important. So if you think, okay, same offensive coordinator, same quarterback, a lot of the same personnel, then the contextualization doesn't matter so much, because the big overall number of yards per route run, that will probably be stable. And also something that I think is worth thinking about with the two wide receiver versus three wide receiver splits is that for some of these guys, say like Jahan Dotson, he's a smaller guy. Right. Rashid Shaheed is also a smaller guy. But what you see is that when they're in two wide receiver sets, they are on the outside. And so one of the big concerns with someone like Jahan Dotson entering the NFL was, would he be a slot only player? And so I think even though he's being funneled the ball more in two wide receiver sets because he's just, you know, one of the two wide receivers out there, they're more prone to throw to a wide receiver versus a tight end. What's encouraging is that he is actually winning in a really strong way on the outside. And so I think that that could carry over to three wide receiver sets a little more for the future. And I would say the same with Rashid Shaheed, the same with Chris Olave. When they are winning on the outside in two wide receiver sets, I think that speaks well to their overall future, their ability to be able to produce in three wide receiver sets moving on.
Yeah, I love all that. Adam, welcome back. Can you hear us?
Hey, thanks.
I love all that. I'm really glad that you brought up those distinctions, because, yeah, the point here isn't to suggest that Chris Olave is overrated necessarily or anything like that, or that this is a negative for him going forward. It's more just to like put it in perspective, like that his rates are inflated. So when you're measuring them relative to other young wide receivers or whatever exercise you're doing using the yard per route run data from a dynasty perspective, like it is worth knowing that they're inflated. I don't know if people would have thought that about Chris Olave just because of the offense that he plays in, because it's not as extreme of an offense as like the Tennessee that we're talking about with Corey Davis, you know?
Let me ask you guys a question. How much do you care about rookie stats? You know, yards per route run, all those things as rookies. I mean, especially if you talk about a guy like Jahan Dotson, he's going to have a new quarterback this year. I like to have, I mean, my sort of, okay, as I've gotten further into advanced stats for any position, any stat, I like to get 2 years of data before I consider it a trend. Like Najee Harris being really bad, basically, is now 2 years, and I'm kind of thinking this guy's just not a very good running back. But for 1 year, you know, how much weight do you put into that? Pat, I'll go to you first. You know, rookie advanced metrics, how much salt do we have to, how many grains of salt do we need to take it with?
Yeah, a few, I think, Adam. I am kind of with you. Like, I like to maybe give it a couple of years for things to sort of normalize a little bit. And, you know, we saw those stark two and three receiver set splits with Jahan Dotson. So it's kind of hard to get a read on him, especially with sort of a truncated season due to injuries. You know, he flashed, but I don't think we know the true level of his water just yet. So I'm kind of with you. I get a little cautious about, like, I don't know. I guess I tend to believe my eyes more with the rookies than I do with the numbers.
Matt?
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Pat said. I think a sufficient time frame is really needed, and maybe more than the time frame, just like the number of reps, like the number of snaps, the number of routes, the number of targets. And, you know, like I'm mentioning their volume stats versus efficiency stats, like especially in fantasy, but I would just say also, you know, just in general for these guys, volume is what really matters. And, you know, makes me think back to like Devontae Adams, who was not that good of a player, especially not an efficient player his first 2 years in the league. But the one thing you could point to was that he was still consistently being targeted within the flow of that offense. And so I do think that more than the efficiency stats, the volume stats for the rookies, the second year wide receivers, those are the things that we can really point to. If a guy is getting targeted consistently, I think at some point the efficiency tends to catch up, unless he's just really bad. And then if that's the case, then the volume tends to crater pretty quickly, because the people who are hands-on with him every day in practice on the field, they just kind of can get the sense of like, this is not a guy that we want to have incorporated into the offense.
Yeah. So Jacob, before we go to any other statistics here, are there any players? I'm sorry if I missed this while I was off in non-internet land. Any players you want to highlight in terms of yards per route run? Other than the, you know, the two receiver versus three receiver stat, but anything else you want to highlight, Jacob? Any players that need to be discussed here? And did we lose Jacob? Wow. CBS at its best. Sorry, guys. How about you guys, Matt, Pat, any players you want to highlight in terms of this particular statistic? And, you know, you can piggyback on what you were just talking about, Matt, with guys who are getting a lot of volume and maybe the next Devontae Adams, anything like that?
I'm going to kick this to Fitz, because one guy that I think stands out in yards per route run, you know, and on this time frame of being a rookie entering his second year, Christian Watson. And I think, you know, there's reason for enthusiasm with what we saw. I mean, totally dynamic on the field. At the same time, you know, new quarterback. And it feels like there could be some Martavis Bryant flukiness a little bit to some of the production that we saw. So Fitz, do you have any thoughts on Christian Watson?
Man, I do not want to hear the Martavis Bryant comp for that. As a Green Bay Packers fan myself, but when Jacob and I were discussing all this backstage, I mean, he sort of mentioned that it was impressive the target share that Watson was able to get when he was running deeper routes downfield, and like sort of the fact that he was able to put up a pretty good yards per route run number despite running these deeper routes. You know, high efficiency at a high average depth of target is really impressive. So I'm definitely cautiously optimistic with him, although the quality of the targets being delivered to him by Jordan Love is probably going to tell the tale quite a bit in 2023. And I don't know, Adam, like one other guy, I feel like I'm just bowled over when I see the yards per route run number over three is Tyreek Hill. And the fact that he was able to do it after changing teams, and, you know, not that Tua Tagovailoa was any slouch last year, he was pretty terrific, but to do it coming from working with Patrick Mahomes to having no established chemistry with Tua, and to be able to put up the numbers he did and just have that sort of freakish efficiency is just mind-boggling.
Yeah. I love that Hill has kind of reinvented himself a little bit. You know, his last season with the Chiefs, I think maybe his last two, he went from a high ADOT guy to a lower ADOT guy, from a non-PPR standout to more of a PPR standout. Doesn't matter. As long as he's getting the ball, he's amazing. But I want to ask you this as Jacob's back here. I want to ask you this about Christian Watson, because I think we all would be really excited about Watson if Aaron Rodgers were back as his quarterback. But in the last eight games of the season, Watson was a top 10 wide receiver. He was top 10 per game. He was number 5 per game in half PPR, number 9 per game in full PPR. There were some rushing numbers in there, but he still, I think, was top 12 if you remove those. Aaron Rodgers in those eight games, he averaged 200 yards per game. He averaged only 28 pass attempts per game, but 200.5 passing yards per game. He was on pace for 3,408 yards, 26 touchdowns, 11 interceptions in 17 games. So it wasn't like he had amazing quarterback play. I know Rodgers last year, I would still expect, even though it wasn't a great year, still expect him to be better than Jordan Love. But I like the fact that Watson, Pat, was able to be a top 10 wide receiver with a guy who was throwing for 200 yards per game and like 1.5 touchdowns per game. Does that give you more hope about what he can do with Jordan Love?
It does. Yeah. Put into perspective of the lower pass volume that the Packers were, that was the shape of their offense last season. And, that he was still able to pop given those constraints. It's encouraging for sure.
All right, Jacob, let's take a break. And when we come back, you tell us where we're going next. You're driving the car today. You tell us which advanced metric we're going to talk about next. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Jacob Gibbs, what's coming up?
I feel like Kadarius Toney over here, man. Like, the production has been great when we're here, but we just can't stay on the field. I don't know if we can trust these per route rates or not. Did you guys talk about Jerry Jeudy at all? Because like, I feel like his yard per route run rate really surprised me. And I do a measure where I measure the yard per route run rates for wide receivers relative to their wide receiver teammates from every offense. And he stood out as having one of the best discrepancies there as well. It was a really bad offense, and he was really productive. That's something we've seen throughout his career. And you talk about Tyreek Hill being able to play different roles. We've seen that from Jeudy as well, different quarterbacks, different types of roles, short, A-dot, long, A-dot. He's been pretty dang efficient. And I just wonder what the ceiling really is if Sean Payton's offense produces in the way that we've seen Sean Payton offenses produce, and he maintains the per route rates that we've seen throughout his career. I think he's one of the best examples of a per route rate use case because he's been injured and on and off the field. But when he's been there, he's been targeted at a high rate always.
Yeah. Who do you want? Matt, why don't you discuss Jerry Jeudy, who was on a per game basis number 22 last year, wide receiver 22, but he missed, he left early in three games. He barely played and had 76 yards on 8 targets in those three games. If you were to take those out, he averaged almost 16 PPR points per game, which would have put him in the top 15. Your thoughts, Matt, on Jerry Jeudy?
Yeah, Jeudy is encouraging based on what we've seen out of him. He can play inside. He can play outside. So, I think that means he's always on the field, no matter it's 2 wide receiver set, 3 wide receiver set. The thing that is a little bit discouraging about him is that Russell Wilson, as bad as he was last year, he might actually be, I can't say he's going to be worse, but I don't think he's going to be significantly better. Now that's just me sort of projecting Russell Wilson. So I don't see the offense as a whole being significantly better. And then with the addition of Marvin Mims, there could be better target competition that Jerry Jeudy is having to deal with. We could see Dulcich, the tight end, progress in his second season. So I think just in terms of trying to have a projection, what Judy did in the past is really good. I honestly don't know how predictive it is of what we're going to see out of him for the future.
Pat, would you rather have Jerry Judy or DJ Moore?
For this year, I think Jerry Judy.
Jacob, how about you?
Yeah, it's clearly Judy for me. Moore was somebody who I wanted to bring up because his yard per route run rate dropped last year. It was at 2 and then 2.2 and then 1.9 in previous years. Last year was at 1.75. Obviously, it wasn't a good offense, but that's been the case for a while. And he's going to an offense where yards have been really hard to come by. Chicago's wide receivers averaged 1.2 yards per run last year. Darnell Mooney led the team with a 1.5 rate. So that's like way, way below what we've seen Judy do. And even when I measured his discrepancy relative to his teammates, he really didn't stand out. Carolina ran a ton of two receiver sets last year, so the yard per route run rates overall were stronger than you might expect. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I really, really struggle when projecting him in Chicago with the volume that we're expecting. If the yardage efficiency drops off and the touchdowns probably aren't going to be there, I think he's one of the most overdrafted players right now. And I'm really excited for Judy.
Yeah, volume, I think, has to be a concern for Moore. But at the same time, as far as efficiency, like, I'm optimistic that maybe Fields can help, because I know that in Baker Mayfield's six starts in Carolina last year, DJ Moore's yards per route run was like 102.
Yeah,
it was absolutely in the tank. So I feel like Fields has to be better for him than Baker Mayfield was, and hopefully at least as good as Sam Darnold was. For for all the knocks on Sam Darnold, he was a pretty effective delivery mechanism for DJ Moore when they played together in Carolina.
Yeah, he was. And, with Fields, the comparison is going to be, well, Josh Allen got Stephon Diggs and he broke out. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts got AJ Brown and the second year of Devontae Smith and he broke out. Does anybody see that happening for Justin Fields as a passer? Or anything, Matt's shaking his head. It doesn't have to be like MVP level, but what do you think, Matt? What do you project from Justin Fields this year?
I think it's going to be something close to the same in terms of what we saw last year. They still have the same head coach, and sure, they've given him more weapons. He should progress a little bit more. The offensive line is better, but I still believe, and I will say, I was super optimistic on Justin Fields entering the NFL. I was optimistic on him entering his second season. I actually had a 150-1 MVP ticket on Justin Fields to win MVP last year. That obviously didn't happen. So, but like, I am optimistic on what he can do in the NFL in general, but I think he's going to be a little bit more in the Lamar Jackson mold, where he's always going to be looking to run a little bit more and not going to be quite the pocket passer that I hoped he would be. And I think that's going to have a really big impact on all of the receiving weapons that he has. So for fantasy, if you're looking to invest in the Bears, I think it's only Justin Fields and then basically fading everybody else.
Totally agree. Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up the MVP ticket, because it's like, yeah, we want these guys to succeed. We're really excited about Justin Fields. We all love DJ Moore. I just don't think the math adds up for him.
I like Khalil Herbert. I know he's not a pass catcher, but we were talking about him. He's being drafted at like 120th overall or something like that. I think that's a little bit too late. Jacob, can we talk about air yards? I know we're going to run out of time. I probably won't be able to get to everything in your notes here. I know you spent a lot of time on these, and I apologize for that. But air yards, ADOT, route depth, those types of things. What do we need to know about that?
Yeah, no worries about not getting everything. We didn't expect the two Wi-Fi crashes in one podcast stream.
I did, unfortunately.
I think we're doing our best. Yeah, so air yards are important, and average route depth and average depth of target are important. These are all things that we're just using to contextualize the bigger picture for what's happening with these guys. Where are these yards per hour run rates coming from? And so the first thing I would bring up is that fantasy points per target go up notably as air yards go up. Even in full PPR, which, more intuitively might favor shorter targets and high catch rates. We have 1.9 PPR points on targets that came 5 or fewer air yards. 5 to 10 air yards is 2. 10 to 15 air yards is 2.2. And then more than 15 air yards is worth 2.6 PPR points per target. So they are important. I know a lot of people like to get mad about air yards, which I don't really understand, but that still happens all the time. But
I hate air yards, Jacob. No, I do. I'm surprised at what you said because I don't like a very high ADOT. You know, like I think Kyle Pitts, his ADOT was over 13. I think it was almost 13.8 yards. I feel like it's a little bit too high, especially from PPR because, you know, it's harder to catch passes. So I am surprised at the statistic you just gave.
The correlation is strong too. The correlation between targets and PPR points is 0.92, which is really, really strong. For air yards, it's 0.808. So that's still really strong. It's not as high as targets, but it's close. I think it's important to bring up that there are outliers. There are people like Pitts where if it gets too high, it is a riskier like week to week proposition. And you run the risk of, you know, not reaching anywhere near the top of their potential range of outcomes. But the fact is having these air yards raises that potential range of outcomes and gives someone like Kyle Pitts access to just immense fantasy potential.
All right. So who do you want to highlight in your air yards discussion?
Let's just start with Pitts. Yeah. The risers, his average depth of target rose from 11 to 13.8 last year, which is like way, way higher than anyone at tight end. And with that, he accounted for 45% of the air yards when on the field, which is one of the highest rates of anyone in the league, not just tight ends. And I want to hear what people think about Pitts, these two particularly, because I think that they keep a very level approach to how they do this. Whereas I like look at these numbers and bang my head against the wall. I'm like, he's got to do it. He's got to be better. So like, I'm very curious to hear what Pat and Matt think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of with Adam on this stance where I think 13.8 is just a ridiculously high, too high ADOT for a tight end, especially when it's Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder trying to get you the ball, which was why we've seen so many highlights of just, you know, comical misses by Marcus Mariota overshooting Kyle Pitts by 3 yards on a deep ball down the seam. I want to see something closer to what we're seeing on the screen right now with Pat Freiermuth and his 8.3-yard average depth of target. Like, unless those targets are coming from a pinpoint passer like Patrick Mahomes or maybe Aaron Rodgers, I kind of want to see a more modest ADOT from my tight ends.
I want to add some context to the conversation. So a couple of things. So one, average depth of target is I wouldn't say there's like selection bias there, but there is a little bit where the quarterback generally is not going to throw the ball as deep downfield if the guy, the receiver doesn't have maybe as much separation as the quarterback would feel comfortable with. So I can see why, even though it's counterintuitive, players who were targeted further down the field actually do have more PPR points on a per target basis because the quarterback is making the choice to throw to them when they are open further down the field. So that's one component of this. The second is Kyle Pitts specific. I love Kyle Pitts. I don't know how I feel about him for this year, but like as a talent, I think he is up there. And the 13.8 ADOT, like you could say that's concerning for a tight end, but the guy is basically a wide receiver in terms of his skill set. And over the past 2 years, when he's lined up on the perimeter, which is where you would expect to see him have the higher ADOT versus when he's lined up in line or in the slot, on the perimeter, he has still been one of the most efficient pass catchers in the NFL. So the high ADOT doesn't concern me in general, because I think he has the skill set to carry it. The high ADOT does concern me within the context of his offense and the quarterback or quarterbacks throwing to him this year. And I also think even though there's no way that the Falcons will be as run heavy this year as they were last year, they're still going to be one of the most run heavy teams in the NFL. So I think like Kyle Pitts, dynasty, I would still be very desirous to acquire him in that format this year. Although potentially he could be a buy low candidate, I'm still a little bit too skeptical of his offensive environment, but the ADOT absolutely doesn't concern me.
Yeah. He straight up like is a wide receiver. He's fifth in yards per run from the perimeter since entering the league. So that's comparing him to other perimeter receivers like Justin Jefferson and stuff like that. I have a crazy Kyle Pitts stat. When on the field last year, he accounted for 32% of Atlanta's targets and 42% of their air yards. So that was higher than any tight end. Travis Kelce's at 29% of the targets for
reference. Okay, I'm gonna revise my statement. I do think he's a decent buy low candidate this year.
Yeah.
Because he's not anywhere close to where he was last year in terms of what you have to pay to acquire him.
Yeah.
Who's your tight end three? Just, I know this is an advanced metrics. This is not an advanced metric question, but everyone's going to have the same one and two, I think. Who's tight end three for you guys?
I've got Hockenson right now.
Yeah, I've got Hockenson too, but I think I might convince myself to move it up to Pitts. Just talk myself into it with all these stats.
Yeah,
there's so much upside there compared to Hockenson.
So he has a lot more upside than Hockenson.
If he hits anywhere near the top of his range of outcomes, it's like changing your season, whereas Hockenson is not giving you that unless there's an injury to Jefferson.
Yeah, I have Hockenson three and Pitts is a very close number four, and I might flip them because I do think that Pitts has the upside. Like, you know, Jacob mentioned the ADOT gives him a really wide range of outcomes where he could just have, like, if he hits with that high ADOT, he could have league winning potential, especially now where you have to, where you are able to get him versus the price that he had last year. So yeah, Pitts, I think it's 3-4 for me.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to have much TJ Hockenson if he stays as tight end three, because I think there are about five guys that could be tight end three. I'd rather just wait. Can we talk about the fallers? Or do you want to stay on that? The ADP, the ADOT fallers, like Michael Pittman, those guys, Jacob?
Yeah, I think Michael Pittman is worth bringing up. His ADOT went way down. It was all the way at 6.5 yards when Matt Ryan was a QB, compared to 9.7 yards during his breakout. That's a massive drop off. And Anthony Richardson had the highest average depth of target of any of the rookie quarterbacks. We don't know how accurate those deep throws are going to be, but I do think we're going to see him used down the field a lot more. And he's been more efficient when in that role. The other guy I wanted to bring up was Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase's average depth of target dropped from 12.6 yards to 9 yards in year two. And we saw as a direct result that he was targeted way, way more often in year two. And this is exciting. This is like where we're seeing him step into the wide receiver one role. Something I tweeted all the time after his rookie season was that T. Higgins was actually better, even at producing fantasy points when both players were on the field, and he was definitely better at drawing targets. But we are seeing Ja'Marr step into a clear wide receiver one role where he's more emphasizing the offense. They're running screens to him. They're running all these slants and short yardage targets we didn't see in year one. As a result, he was less efficient. He didn't have as many of these long ones break as he did in year one. So he's significantly less efficient on his routes. But I'm just curious what you guys think. If he has the potential as his target rate increases, just given what we've seen from him from an efficiency standpoint, if he has potential to be wide receiver one just easily this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's encouraging that maybe we saw that little bit of a drop. So he wasn't just the lid lifter and was running a fuller complement of routes. I do wonder if maybe a little bit of that wasn't related to the troubles the offensive line was having. Like Cincinnati sort of rebuilt their offensive line in the offseason last year. They made personnel upgrades, but it took a little time to consolidate all the new talent on the offensive line. And like Joe Burrow's sack rate was sky high, I recall, like in the early weeks of the season. And maybe just the fact that he had to get rid of the ball a little more quickly than he would have liked. So I think that might account for, you know, some of the drop, but, you know, maybe it is also just a conscious effort to get Chase the ball more often.
Yeah, I think with Ja'Marr Chase, part of it was also defenses playing them a little bit different from year one to year two. And so the Bengals making the sort of Chiefs-like adjustment in terms of how they run their offense. And so, as you mentioned, Jacob, you know, the loss in ADOT was more than counterbalanced by the increased volume that he saw. So no worries with Ja'Marr Chase. It's just showing that, like, he can win down the field and he can win in more of the intermediate area. With Michael Pittman, I'm a little bit ambivalent or uncertain about how the ADOT will change for him, because with the addition of Alex Pierce, like, Pierce has that downfield skill set where Pittman no longer needs to function in that capacity. And now that they have Josh Downs, who can be kind of that slot receiver who's a little closer to the line of scrimmage, I have the feeling that maybe Pittman is just kind of locked in a little bit more to that intermediate area of the field. And given that he's playing with a rookie quarterback, a mobile quarterback, I just think we're going to see an offensive environment that's, it's not going to be as bad as it was last year, but it's not going to be as good as it would be if it were just another veteran, like, I don't know, like Kirk Cousins or something, like another veteran coming in who's a established pocket passer who can deliver the ball to the guys in a manner that we can easily project. So I think there's a wide range of what we could see out of Michael Pittman this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think intermediate is the right word. My point is that it's not going to be anywhere near where it was last year. 6.5 with Matt Ryan, 6.9. That's way too low. Like, we're talking about Curtis Samuel, 6.7. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 6.5. Paris Campbell, whoever next, like, is just a running back around the line of scrimmage, 6.4 in the same offense, like just barely below Pittman. I think it's going to come up a lot, and just that should help his efficiency.
I want to give a stat. I don't have an updated stat on this, but this is about Ja'Marr Chase. And I think we had two teams where we had wide receiver teammates finish in the top 16 last year. That would have been the Eagles and the Dolphins, and actually maybe the Bengals too. But over the last 7 years, there have been something like 16 or 17 teammate pairs who have both finished top 16. And the only time I think that we had a number one overall wide receiver in those pairs was Jordy Nelson in like 2016. And he was wide receiver one in non-PPR. He was wide receiver two in full PPR. And my point is with Ja'Marr Chase is I think T. Higgins is probably what prevents him from being wide receiver one. Usually, and I mean, and he's wide receiver two or three at worst, right? But wide receiver one is typically a major target hog, like alpha guy without serious competition. It's hard for me to say that when Chase was on pace for like 190 targets last year. And per game, he was number three. But that was with the lower ADOT. But you don't see a lot of guys finish as the number one wide receiver when they have someone as good as T. Higgins on their team. This would be my point.
I've got a few things. First, Jordy Nelson was awesome. I'm so glad to bring him up in this in this context. I'm a little worried about T. Higgins. His per route rates really dropped last year, and I'm curious to gauge anyone else's feelings on that because, like, typically, even though he's on and off the field and that bothers everyone, his per route stuff is really strong. And so that gives us continued optimism that when he's finally able to put together a full season, it'll be really good. But last year it did drop off. And as we saw Ja'Marr Chase elevate his game and his ability to draw targets, T. Higgins kind of shrunk a little bit. And I'm curious what we expect going into this next year. Cause I think it's entirely possible he might fall out of the top 16 or top 20 number that you gave Adam, which would allow Chase to be that wide receiver one. I think the point of like bringing up Kansas City's offense and how they adjusted to defenses relative to Chase is really a smart one. Like, I think it's very similar to what we've seen with Tyreek, where Tyreek was insanely efficient but never drew the targets. And then he moved into a shortened role, and then he had that explosion year. And I think we could see something like that from Chase.
But what are you seeing from Higgins? Because his yards per catch, yards per target, his ADOT, his catch rate, almost identical. His 17-game pace, I'm the guy who removes all the games where they leave with injury, and there were three of those for Higgins where it really kill his per-game numbers. He had two catches in those three games. But like those rates that are on Pro Football Reference, those are all like exactly the same. But when you get into the advanced stuff, what do you see that concerns you about Higgins?
The per targets are the same, but the targets drop. The targets per route run, all those rates drop. And so he wasn't drawing his targets as often. And so his yardage per route run stuff dropped as well. And so like, I think if the touchdowns aren't there and if he continues to not be targeted at the same rate, he doesn't project quite as well as some of the other guys who I think could step into a bigger role this year.
Anyone else feeling that? Pat, Matt?
Yeah, I can't really explain the efficiency drop for Higgins.
He wasn't targeted as much.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jacob hit it there. You know, he wasn't targeted as much because you had an already awesome wide receiver, progressing even more in his second season, and the offense changing a little bit to where it's just easier to target Ja'Marr Chase in the intermediate area of the field.
So my guess, Jacob, is that he wasn't targeted as much on a per route basis, but on a per game basis, per full game, like not the three that he barely played. He was targeted as much because Burrow just threw the ball a lot more this year. He went from 520 pass attempts to 606 in 16 games each of the last two seasons. And that was probably, like, I don't know if that was like they were just throwing the ball shorter a lot more, not getting as many big chunk plays. So the target, maybe the target per route run went down, but the overall targets the same. That's just my theory. And if they go back to throwing the ball downfield more, maybe they throw the ball less, but they have more splash plays, and he's part of that. I'm not really worried about it. I mean, I think he's really good, and just I think he's like the easiest third round pick. You know, like I have more concerns about Devontae Smith than I do about T. Higgins, and they go back to back basically in ADP.
Yeah. He just didn't have the upside to get to like a 30% target share. I actually do look at the like per game stuff, and like he only got that in one of 13 healthy games. Did he get a 30% target share? And that was something that he was getting before. And that's all that I'm saying. He got that 29% of his games the year before, four out of 14 healthy games, just one out of 13 last year. And I just think that, that's what we're seeing is Jamar is starting to take over as the centerpiece. And there are games where Joe Burrow completely locks in on him and then T. Higgins isn't getting it as often. And just, I agree with you. Like he's still probably going to see enough overall volume to be good for fantasy. I just haven't heard people talk about this very much. And I think it's important to bring up. I've seen Dwayne McFarland talk about it here and there and saying that really he profiles more as like a wide receiver three with upside than a wide receiver two where he's going. And really, this isn't even negative about T. Higgins. Ultimately, I was trying to be positive about Jamar Chase because I think he does have potential to take over as like a true target hog. Because there were times where it looked that way, where they were just going to him over and over and over.
Yeah. Fair enough. I don't think, as long as Jamar Chase is on the field, T. Higgins does not have huge upside. Definitely. I mean, it's funny because we just talked about this on the show we did earlier today and the numbers bear it out, you know, but it's like wide receiver 13 basically is kind of what he's been with Chase on the field the last 2 years. And that's kind of how I would rank him and draft him.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, Jacob Gibbs, what else you got for us here? I'm sorry to hijack your show. where do you want to go to now?
So Devontae Smith is kind of Jamar Chase light. His average depth of target came way down, and it wasn't a change of average route depth. He was running a similar route tree. They were just throwing him way more screens. He went from 4 screen targets as a rookie to 21 last year. They were using him in the slot and increased that motion more. And just overall, they were like really, really looking to get him the ball. From week 10 on, he actually out-targeted A.J. Brown. So he's somebody I wrote about splits versus man coverage, splits versus press coverage, and he really improved those from year one to year two as well. Everything about Devontae like looks like he's legit, like legitimately a wide receiver one type of player. And he did all this with AJ Brown, who, talk about per route data, prior to last year, AJ Brown's per route data was like, I'm Calvin Johnson. It was like better than anybody, any young receiver, better than Justin Jefferson, that kind of player. Like it was absolutely insane. And Devontae, like he comes into the offense and Devontae still was able to improve all of his per route data while being used in a completely different role, which I just thought was like unbelievably exciting. We've seen him succeed down the field. We've seen him succeed as a short guy. So I just wanted to gush about Devontae a little bit and see what people think about him.
Yeah. Just to follow up quickly on that. Devontae, he had a fantastic season. And this is one of those instances where a declining ADOT is actually a good sign because a guy is getting targeted so much. He's not being targeted just down the field. It's a sign that he's actually being targeted all over the field as like a legit playmaking wide receiver who's fully incorporated into the flow of the offense.
Yeah. Do you guys worry a little bit that things might change with, Shane Steichen no longer there, that maybe they, that offense doesn't run quite as efficiently? I mean, I love that they figured it out with Devonta last year, because 2 years ago, I mean, the Eagles were running like a Big Ten team at that kind of rate and just running far too often. And like they really figured out how to unlock Smith last year. And like that was part of why their offense was so much more potent. But I'm a little bit worried that maybe things change, with a different play caller.
I thought that, Matt, I feel like I've just thought like AJ Brown in the second year of the offense could step into the type of like something resembling the per route rates we've seen from previously. And if he did that, it would just be almost impossible for Devontae to see the volume he did last year. I haven't thought about the offense changing really.
I mean, okay. We would have to think that in the ranges of outcomes for this offense, it is likelier than not that they regress. If we're just thinking about how things tend to work. That said, Jalen Hurts has gotten better every single year of his career, like going back to college. And so there is still the possibility that Jalen Hurts could be an even better passer this year than he was last year. And that could still be the case even with the offense regressing some, just like Jalen Hurts in general, as a guy who navigates the pocket and moves through his progressions, he could be better this year. So I don't know if I'm taking that into account and then taking into account the probability of regression, I would say that we probably see Devontae Smith not play quite as well. We probably see that entire offense take a step back, but not that big of a step back. I think it will be in the same vicinity of where it has been, or at least what we saw last year.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue for what we're going to talk about next, actually, with red zone and end zone targets. Because
wait, we got to take a break first. All right, we got to take a quick commercial break. When we come back into the red zone, the green zone, the end zone, right after this on Fantasy Football Today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, Jacob, take us to the red zone.
So we could simply see Philadelphia throw way more touchdowns based off Matt's point. Like, the offense as a whole could regress. The efficiency and the scoring as a whole could regress, but the ratio of passing to rushing touchdowns could change dramatically. Philly had the third lowest pass rate when in the red zone last year, like tied with Atlanta and just above Chicago. The very, very bottom. Like, we're talking about how Chicago and Atlanta's offenses really aren't replicable. Like, teams never do this. They're bound to throw more. Philadelphia was there when it came to throwing in the red zone. They only threw 11 passing touchdowns in the red zone. And these things even out year over year. They're going to probably continue to be a run heavy team, of course. But like, if Jalen keeps getting better and they keep trusting him more, we could see what we saw with Lamar Jackson a few years ago, where all of a sudden these rushing touchdowns turn into passing touchdowns, and it could be huge for AJ Brown and Devontae Smith.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys. Yes, that's all right. I want to make a broader point about the Eagles' offense, and that would be that they don't throw the ball a ton. Obviously, I think they were like 20th in pass attempts last year. And I've said this before. I've said it with, you know, the guys I normally do the show with. So Pat and Matt, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. When you think about the teams where we are drafting two wide receivers in the first 30 picks, talking about the Dolphins, the Bengals, and the Eagles, and then the other two teams, you're not drafting a tight end, maybe at all. If you are, it's really late. The Eagles, you're drafting Goddard, I don't know, is going to be like sixth round or so, something like that. Top five tight end in ADP. And they just don't throw the ball that much. So I do wonder if they're going to have to throw more touchdowns, like Jacob was saying, to justify the ADP for all of those players. Or if we're just going to, if one of those guys is just going to be a huge bust or something. I don't know how you, I find them to be an interesting projection, because you need like extreme efficiency like you got from Jalen Hurts to make it work, I think, because they just don't throw the ball that much. And I would also, I've pointed this out, the first nine games of the season before Dallas Goedert's injury, Devontae Smith was number 35 per game. He was wide receiver 35. He didn't take off until after the injury. So I think there's a lot of interesting parts there. Matt, what do you think about the Eagles offense? And this, and we'll carry in this red zone discussion. Maybe they will throw more touchdowns there.
Yeah, so they could throw more touchdowns. It would be hard for them to throw fewer touchdowns than they had last year. So I do think that that could be a source of hidden production for the wide receivers. But yeah, Adam, I'm 100% taking your point there, where you have two wide receivers who are going near the top of the draft. You've got a strong tight end. You've got a pass-catching running back in DeAndre Swift, who right. people really right. seem to like and think like, oh, this is a guy who's going to produce in this offense. But we still have to admit it's a run heavy scheme. And like Jalen Hurts is one of the best quarterback sneaking runners that we have out there, especially near the goal line. So I think if you're investing in it, like you can say, AJ Brown is great. Devontae Smith is great. Goddard is great. And maybe there's room for one of them. It's hard to know which one is actually going to be the guy who pays off or maybe strongly outproduces his draft position. So like if you're thinking about who to draft at value, it actually is pretty hard to know.
I feel like Dallas Goedert is going to once again be the take one for the team guy as far yeah. as touchdown totals. Like he's never had more than five in a season. What we like about him is that he's actually the rare big play tight end. Like his yards per catch looks more like a wide receiver than a tight end. His yards per target has been over 10 in each of the last 2 years, which is kind of crazy for a tight end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he just doesn't score touchdowns for whatever reason.
Yeah, Goddard's the guy I end up never getting. He's like insanely good at football, but I have a hard time projecting it for him if the touchdowns aren't there.
Jacob, what else from the red zone or green zone or end zone do you want us to know?
Yeah, so I wanted to just bring up the Chiefs. Obviously, we know how insane it is over there, but they're the perfect combination of like insanely high volume and insanely high pass rate. So last year, the red zone pass rate's the top five. We've got Tampa Bay at 67. That's probably going to change a lot this year. I'm actually kind of excited for Rashad White, but that's a topic for another day. Minnesota Vikings, 63% red zone pass rate. Kansas City at 60. The Rams at 60. And the Chargers at 59. Compare that to, like we brought up, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Chicago, all the way down at 33%. And the result is Kansas City produced 107 red zone targets. Travis Kelce had 30 red zone targets. And the like Panthers and Bears and Giants, sorry, Adam, were all below 40. So like Kelce almost had as many as them by himself. And I just, I think the point I wanted to make with Kansas City specifically is I think the Rashee Rice is being underdrafted. And just this is just kind of a thing, a feel I've got as a Kansas City guy. The more I've listened to Brett Veach and the team talk about his fit, they compare him to Juju. And I think that that makes sense. In his first 2 years in college, he was a slot guy, a big slot guy, and he moved to the perimeter last year. But he actually wasn't that great when facing press coverage, man coverage. He didn't do the perimeter receiver things you'd expect from a prospect that got drafted that high at the collegiate level. Like normally they dominate man coverage. He was much better. He was much more comfortable in the slot, but he did play in two receiver sets. And I think that that may be the way Kansas City uses him. We've got all this Kadarius Toney hype, but like we have struggled to see him ever stay on the field. And Sky Moore has not been the guy in two receiver sets. So I don't know, like, is anyone buying him or do we just wait for DeAndre Hopkins to get signed and it's irrelevant?
Yeah, that's like the thing that's lurking here, that anything we say, DeAndre Hopkins could sign this afternoon and just blow up any takes on this. But man, like I can see that case for Rashee Rice, but man, I'm just kind of excited about Kadarius Toney, and it's just been his ability to draw targets. And I mean, like for his career, he has played 445 regular season snaps and has drawn 77 targets. So he has been targeted on 17.3% of all his snaps. And that includes running plays. Like when that guy is on the field, he draws targets. And like, I don't want to be a Pollyanna about his ability to stay healthy. Like the odds of Kadarius Toney playing 17 games are maybe, you know, slightly better than the odds of me being People Magazine's sexiest man alive for 2023. But still though, if he can give us something close to a full season of good health, like I'm just excited to see how it's going to look there. And I know he's not going to be a 90% snap guy. Like it's probably not prudent as frail as he is, but man, I'm excited about what that could look like if he did stay somewhat healthy.
Past two seasons, the only receivers with a higher target rate than Kadarius Toney are Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, and Tyreek Hill. So like, yeah, we absolutely need to bring him up on the advanced stat episode because yeah, like we just talked about with all these red zone targets available, like it could get out of control with Toney.
Wide range of outcome, massively
wide
range
as it gets.
Of outcomes. Because yeah, like the advanced metrics look good, but I always go back to like route run data on this. You know, like he played 5 snaps in the Super Bowl. You know, like that's the most important game of the year. You know, like you got Kadarius Toney for this reason. And they didn't use him nearly as much as they probably could have. And you know, like there were some circumstances as to like why you could explain they're not using him as much as they could. And maybe you think they use him more this year. Certainly they use him more than 5 snaps per game this year, but they did draft a wide receiver in round 2 last year. They followed that up by drafting Rashee Rice in round 2 this year. Like they brought back Justin Watson, not like Justin Watson's going to still snap, but like, it's to say that I don't think Kadarius Toney is locked in as like the true number one wide receiver in that offense. It feels a little bit like a Percy Harvin situation where even if he's reaching his best case scenario, he is a rotational player that they bring in.
At one point this offseason, I had Travis Kelce as my number one overall pick. I'm not there anymore. I'm somewhere between like 2 and 4. But especially that red zone stuff. I mean, I just feel like he had 30 red zone targets, you said, Jacob. I mean,
yeah.
End zone, green zone, red zone. I can't imagine Kelsey's not going to be among the leaders. And, you know, Juju was, it didn't hurt Kelce or anything like that, but he was, became the clear number one wide receiver on the team before his concussion. I don't, this whole argument to me is maybe just making me more excited about Travis Kelce. I can't take him over Justin Jefferson, but. I mean, he's easily a top 5 pick for me, probably a top 3 pick for me.
Yeah, I it's easy to put him there. I think that makes sense. And I'm glad that we're like finally doing it as an industry, giving Kelce the respect that he deserves.
Now that he's super old, we're going to get him as soon as he starts breaking down, right?
Yeah, I wanted to end with these. So this is something that I measure. It's the percentage of each player's team's red zone and end zone targets that they draw while they're on the field. And mostly I wanted to bring this up because we get so excited about Christian Watson and he stands out really clearly in all these. The other guy we've talked about with Philadelphia's offense improving is AJ Brown. So AJ Brown is 4th here with a 36% of Philly's targets win in the red zone. And if you look at the end zone targets, he had the highest in the league, 55%. DK Metcalf was the next at 49%. So clearly there for him. And he really didn't score a ton of touchdowns last year. So I think it could be just a massive explosive year for him. The other guy I wanted to highlight was DK Metcalf. So Metcalf is somebody I'm a little bit concerned with. His per route data has not been very encouraging the last few years. He's been targeted much, much more. It seems like they've wanted to make him this wide receiver one, but the efficiency has not followed. Only 997 yards in 2021, of course. But he was somebody they locked onto in the red zone last year. And if this offense ends up being significantly better, which I think people are really bullish on this team, I think Jason could really help them a lot. Like he is somebody who also could really surprise people. And I'm just curious what you guys think about DK, because he's really one of the most polarizing players for me early on in the evaluation process.
Yeah. Pat, you want to jump in?
Yeah. I mean, man, the guy is just such a physical marvel. Like I've always wanted to be in on him, but I am starting to get a little concerned about some of the efficiency numbers and just obviously the addition of JSN and what that could mean to DK's share of the pie.
I think that's fair. I second what Fitz said on Metcalf. The guy who actually stands out to me looking on this list is Garrett Wilson, because yes, we see Christian Watson near the top of the board there. And, you know, you see Davante Adams as a guy who was on this list this past year and, you know, was near the top of the league in previous seasons with Aaron Rodgers throwing to him. And now you have Garrett Wilson coming off a super studly first year, entering his second year, you know, maybe a better offensive coordinator situation, definitely a better quarterback situation with Aaron Rodgers now there. And it feels like if there is a wide receiver who is going to get the Davante Adams treatment from Aaron Rodgers, it's going to be Garrett Wilson. And maybe we see Garrett Wilson, even if he stays at, you know, 34% of red zone targets for his team, we would still see him progress in his second season. But if that number shoots up to something like 38%, 42%, I mean, man, we could be talking about a guy who has 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns.
These actually, Jacob, brings up two of my favorite statistics. I think people have heard me say them enough. I'm sorry, but Pat and Matt probably have not. So I will say, first of all, DK Metcalf has been top four in end zone targets every year of his career. Mm-hmm. That's the first stat. And the second stat is about Aaron Rodgers and how he just falls in love with one player near the end zone every year. From 2012 to 2021, in those 10 seasons, a Green Bay wide receiver ranked top 10 in green zone targets in 7 of the 10 seasons, top 6 in green zone targets in 4 of the 10 seasons. So what happened last year, the first half of the year, Alan Lazard was 5th in green zone targets, or red zone targets, sorry. And in the second half of the year, Christian Watson was 5th in red zone targets and 2nd in green zone targets. Lazard was 6th in green zone targets in the first half of the year. So he did it again, Rodgers, in 2022. He just did it with a different number one receiver because Watson was kind of in and out of the lineup the first half of the year. Then Lazard got hurt and Watson took over. But that's just what he does. And it's basically 11 years, almost every single year where it's happening. So I thought that was, you know, really interesting and just plays well for Garrett Wilson, who already was doing that last year with the Jets. And now could be an even better situation for him, believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm really glad you bring that up. The tendency that Rodgers has to lock in on a guy in the red zone. And I think Wilson just fits that perfectly. So he became the first rookie in 10 years that I have the data to hit both a 30% share of his team's targets in the red zone when he was on the field and a 40% share of their air yardage, or of their end zone targets, sorry, when he was on the field. So he was 5th in end zone target share and 7th in red zone target share. I think he fits really well with what Rodgers likes to do with the quick throws as well. He was targeted at one of the highest rates last year on throws that happened in under 2 seconds. And Joe Flacco is somebody who like actually profiles almost exactly like Rodgers in terms of his tendencies. He's either doing quick throws or long throws. And when Joe Flacco was on the field, Garrett Wilson drew the types of target rates that Matt alluded to. You know, if he has the potential to get up to this 42% rate or whatever, you know, we're just talking about hypotheticals. But when we saw him with Flacco, he was at those rates. His rates were dragged way, way down by his time with Zach Wilson. But when he was with Flacco, who plays just like Rodgers, he was just feeding him on those quick targets. I think it's possible he could just absolutely explode. All the numbers back it up perfectly.
Are you guys going to take Garrett Wilson or Devontae Smith or T. Higgins? Who's your favorite in that group?
Wilson, easily for me.
Same.
Yeah.
Okay. How about A.J. Brown or Garrett Wilson?
That's really tough.
I think I've got A.J. one spot higher right now.
Yeah, I think so too. That's really tough.
I have Garrett Wilson one spot higher than A.J. Brown. I think that one's pretty close to a coin flip.
Okay, before we leave, Pat and Matt, do you have, sorry for putting you on the spot here, but I feel like you probably have this, a 2023 wide receiver sleeper or breakout that you'd like to share?
Fitz, you go first.
Oh, man. Tony was probably going to be my guy, but like another possibility, and I hate to do it just because, you know, depth chart stuff, but like Treylon Burks. And the fact that, you know, he had been sort of a schemed touches guy when he was in college at Arkansas, but his average depth of target last year was like, 11.9 or something like that. So he was operating deeper downfield. And I'm just kind of optimistic that if he can stay healthy, he's going to be sort of a potential target hog for Tennessee, a team that's probably going to be digging itself a lot of holes and playing from behind quite a lot of pass friendly game script. So, you know, Burks isn't really a sleeper, but I think he could be a value in the, early to mid rounds.
I'm super excited for Treylon Burks. I would bring up, he wasn't targeted in the red zone at all last year. He had one of the lowest rates. I talked about the percentage of the targets they drew while on the field in the red zone. His was only 18%. And I heard Hayden Winks talk about Treylon Burks and just the fact that like, he struggled to get into the offense early on. He was injured and they were like things that he was messing up. And just Mike Vrabel is somebody who is not going to make that player a feature part of his offense, not going to make a rookie who's struggling with the mental side of the game a feature part of his offense. But I think it's entirely possible that with more time in the system, now he's ready to be that. And that's really exciting because like Pat talked about, the per route stuff we saw last year from him was pretty good, even though he basically was just thrown out there and being like told, like, just go produce, just go get open. There were times where they're running just one receiver plays where it was just like, go get open, Treylon, against Green Bay. And it was working.
Yeah.
Like he's got the talent and they really might scheme things to him a lot more in year two.
All right. I have a couple of players, I guess three players that I would want to mention. So deep down, and we talked about him earlier, Rashid Shaheed, you know, as an undrafted rookie last year, he did really well in, I think, pretty negative circumstances in New Orleans. This year, you know, more of a professional pocket passing quarterback in Derek Carr. You know, yes, Michael Thomas is returning, so there's a question about volume, but I think Shaheed, with his field stretching skill set, you know, it's a cop out to say like he's the best ball player, because, you know, like everyone's basically best ball player, but like he actually is the true best ball player, where if he scores a touchdown, you know, it's probably being accompanied by 70 yards. So he's someone that you get really late down the board, who's intriguing to me in the best ball format. Quentin Johnston, you know, the rookie with the Chargers out of TCU, he's going to have target competition if Keenan Allen and Mike Williams stay healthy. That said, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, they're not like the healthiest guys. I would say like it's probably fair to say that they are injury prone at this point. And you do have Keenan Allen, who is, you know, past the age apex. So Quentin Johnston feels like someone that you can get, you know, like outside of the top 40 wide receivers, who like has a path to significant upside through just, you know, kind of found targets paired with a quarterback who is really good and can throw the ball downfield. And maybe there's some extra synergy with them having a new offensive coordinator as well, who can help unlock that offense. And then one more guy, I mentioned him earlier, Gabe Davis. Like, he feels like a post-hype value, because it's still a great offense. Maybe Dalton Kincaid doesn't take over the world the way that people think he's going to as this slot hybrid tight end. And Stephon Diggs, obviously awesome, but like there's enough production within that offense to go around where Diggs could still be a very strong number one wide receiver. And Gabe Davis, as a guy who's going like outside the top 36, could still significantly outproduce his ADP.
Oh yeah, love it. Very clearly, I think, affected by the Josh Allen elbow injury last year. If you look at the numbers. All right, thank you guys very much. It was great to have you on. Matt, best of luck to you in your future endeavors.
Thank you.
Pat, thank you. Always great to have you on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And Friedman, you're such a TCU homer. I knew you were going to work in a Quentin Johnston endorsement.
That's not fair.
And Jacob, looks like you are kind of a sleeper to be People Magazine's sexiest man alive. Busted out the tank tops every show. I love it. This has been Beyond the Box Score. We'll have another episode for you some point soon. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Talk to you later on Fantasy Football Today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.